It is available in the box. Which box, Mary? G. Box G, outside of 102 Steel. Average homework score for CDS 101 students was 19 out of 20. Standard deviation of 5. Average time 3 hours. CDS 110 students, you see there. Where is it? Average of 34. Standard deviation of 4. Average time 6.5 hours. Add 3 lecture hours. 9.5. 9 units. We're good. All right. That was homework 1. How many people think they spent 6.5 hours or less on homework set number 2? A couple? All right. Good. Homework number 2 is usually a little bit harder. Homework number 2 is due today at 5 o'clock. Please, don't need to put the course number, but please put the number of hours spent on the back of the first page so we can keep track of things like this. We have tried in homework set number 2 and homework set number 3 to bring the number of hours down from last year. And the automatic timing is going to annoy the hell out of me. Homework number 3 is up on the website. It's due next Monday at 5 o'clock. Okay? Any questions about, before I get started on the lecture material and while I fix this, any questions about homework or any of these other things, administrative things? Okay. Let me fix my transitions. Well, should be all right. Okay. So, material for today is dynamic behavior and stability in particular. So what I'm going to try and do is to describe the use of phase portraits to visualize the behavior of dynamical systems. So it's a tool that we use. I'm then going to describe different types of stability for an equilibrium point. So we'll define an equilibrium point. We'll talk about stability of equilibrium points. And then I want to say a little bit about the difference between local stability and global stability and some of the ideas around stability. So the reading for this week is out of Chapter 4. If you're in CDS 101, it's just the first two sections, 4.1, 4.2. If you're in 110, it's going to be the whole chapter by the end of the week. If you're interested in a more advanced treatment of this work, you can look in Chapter 6 of this book on nonlinear dynamics and chaos. That just happens to be where they put the things that we're going to cover today. All right. So that's the plan for the day, is to really start talking about dynamic behavior. So last week we talked about the notion of models, and that a model had some notion of state, input, outputs, and dynamics. The dynamics might be represented by differential equations or by difference equations, depending on the system. And remember that the choice of model depends on the questions that you want to answer. And so if you want to answer how much does the mass move back and forth in these, then you choose a certain type of model. From here on out, we're going to more or less assume that you have a model that represents the questions that you want to answer. We're now going to analyze and design using that model. And so we're no longer going to kind of come back and look in detail at what model you should use. We're going to assume that you know enough about your system to do that. So what we want to do then today is really start looking at this notion of dynamic behavior and stability. So recall from the first week that a feedback system might look something like speed control, cruise control, which you've now done several times on the homeworks. So you have a vehicle, you want to sense its speed, you want to compute a control law, you want to actuate each of these blocks, right? And the vehicle dynamics block may have substructure underneath them. And we have these three things that we want to ask about: stability, performance, and robustness. And so stability we'll now start to get much more precise about. In particular, what we're going to be interested in is looking at a dynamical system, possibly nonlinear, so a differential equation, with a specific control law chosen, some way of feeding back information. And when we put these two together, we'll have a closed loop system. That is x dot equals f of x comma u. U is k of x, so this whole thing is some function of x. So we'll look and ask, is the closed loop system stable? We'll also look at the performance of the closed loop. So for example, the stability and performance are separate. An example of that is shown here in this figure. Here is a set of systems. This is basically a set of cruise controllers with different gains. All of them are stable. So what happens is we command a step input. The first one, if you want, has a high oscillation but eventually dies down. The second one, a smaller oscillation, dies down pretty quickly. The third one, a little bit of overshoot and then comes in. And the fourth one, really nice. Each of these are stable, but if I asked you which one do you want for your cruise controller, notice that this one has an overshoot that's probably as big as the size of the step. So if you commanded a 5-mile-an-hour step, this would shoot you, so say 55 to 60, this would shoot you up to 65, all the way back down to 60, back up, right, down, and finally settle you in, right? So you would probably claim this is a crummy controller, but it's stable. Right? It eventually gets you there. So we want to look at, how do we look at the difference of these in terms of the dynamics? And then the third goal that we had for these systems was robustness. And we're not going to talk about robustness today. We're going to talk about that about starting week five or six. All right. So today we want to start looking at stability and performance of these closed loop systems. So one of the tools that we'll use to do that is something that's called a phase portrait. And the idea on a phase portrait is that it allows us to view a dynamical system as a vector field. And the basic idea is very simple. If I have a vector field here in the plane, and phase portraits work for planar dynamical systems or two-dimensional dynamical systems, then at every point in the state space, so here x1 and x2 are my states, and at any of these points, I can draw the vector that is the velocity at that point. All right, so if I go to this point 0.5 and up to minus 0.5, that point right there, I can plug in x1 equals 0.5, x2 equals minus 0.5 into this. I get some direction. Right? And that's the direction at that point that the system is going to change. That is, if I'm at that state, that's the velocity that I'm going to have at that point. And so this arrow diagram tells me something about what the vector field looks like. And you can kind of imagine that what I might do is I might start someplace and follow this arrow. That puts me to a different place. I follow that arrow. And you can kind of see a little bit of a swirling pattern here, maybe. If I followed all of the arrows, that's the same as solving this differential equation. And so this sort of a portrait, we can then put these streamlines on there that are, in fact, exactly those bits that follow the arrows. So normally when we talk about a phase portrait, we'll mean a picture like this. Now, this tells us a lot about this particular dynamical system. It tells us, for example, that any trajectory starting inside this box, right, eventually goes to the origin, right? Because this is the flow of that. If I start here, I follow these arrows, I eventually come in. So you can just look at this and see that this system somehow brings all solutions to x1 equals 0, x2 equals 0, at least in this box that we have defined here that we've plotted it. So it gives us insight about the dynamics of the system. And the shape of this, whether it's swirling or not and other things, will eventually relate to the performance of the system. And so one way you can think about the design of a feedback system is that we want to design the dynamics, that is, design the dynamics such that this phase plot has a certain look to it. Where do you want the equilibrium points? What do you want the curves to look like? So that's a way you can think about this problem. And there is a program that you can use. It's not yet on the website. And Mary, can you remind me to put it up there? But it will be. You'll need it for your homework. Called Phase Plot. It's a MATLAB script that basically generates these types of plots. And there's documentation for how to use that. So in your homework, you'll basically generate these sorts of plots, and you just call this phase plot command. There are other ones that are out on the web, and you can go use those too if you want, but this is one that was just a script that I wrote a couple of years back. Okay? All right, so the first concept that we need to talk about is the notion of an equilibrium point. So an equilibrium point represents the stationary conditions for the dynamics. Stationary meaning that if I start there, I stay there. So if I have a system x dot equals f of x, then the equilibria of that system are the points x sub e such that the vector field at those points is equal to 0. So in particular, if I start at xe, then x dot will be equal to 0, and that means I stay at xe. So it's an equilibrium point because I stay there. So here's an example of a two-dimensional system. This is, in fact, something that's going to look like an inverted pendulum. The vector field is x2 sine x1. And if I ask, well, when is f of xe, that's this part here, equal to 0? Well, if this is equal to 0, then x2 must equal to 0, right? Because the whole vector has to be equal to 0. And sine of x1 must be equal to 0. If sine of x1 is equal to 0, then it must be some multiple of pi, where n is from minus infinity all the way up to plus infinity, including 0. Right? So 0, 1, minus 1, 2, minus 2, etc. And so here's a phase portrait for that system. And so we look at x1 and x2, and these green spots here are the equilibrium points. There's one at 0, 0, and if I plug 0, 0 in here, I get 0. There's one at pi 0. So if I plug in pi 0, x2 is 0, sine of pi is 0, so I stay there, etc. Right? And the rest of the vector field sort of shows what happens in this particular dynamical system, and we can follow the flow of that. So this is the definition of equilibrium points, is this right up here, and in a planar dynamical system, you can represent those as points on the plane. Okay, so what do we then do if we want to talk about stability of equilibrium points? So I have equilibrium points, but they could be stable, they could be unstable. What do all of those words mean? All right, so we'll say that an equilibrium point is stable and in fact asymptotically stable if all nearby initial conditions converge to the equilibrium point as time flows forward. So an example of one is this picture here, the one we were just looking at. 0, 0 is a stable equilibrium point because if I start nearby, in fact, any place in this box, right, then my solutions move along these lines. You have to look at the directions of the arrow, but they move along these lines and they converge to this equilibrium point. In fact, if you run a simulation of this system, what that simulation might look like is something like this. So here are the two states. One of these is x1, one of them is x2. And you see that they both converge to 0 as a function of time. Now, this representation is nice, but it only tells you about one set of initial conditions. The initial condition given by probably x2 equals 0, x1 equals 1. This tells you simultaneously about all initial conditions in this box, right? Up to, you know, what happens between the lines, right? And so, assuming some continuity, it basically tells you what's happening. What this one tells you that this one doesn't is how fast does it converge? Right? So this one in time tells me that I converge pretty close within 5 seconds. If I give you a look at this, you couldn't tell me whether it converges in 5 seconds or 500 seconds. You have no way of knowing what the notion of time is. You can look at the length of the arrows and sort of sort it out, but it doesn't just, you know, jump out at you. So this tells us more about the behavior of many equilibrium points. This tells us more about how time evolves. So that's sort of a pictorial definition. The formal definition is that an equilibrium point is asymptotically stable if the limit as t approaches infinity of x of t, the solutions of my differential equation, approach my equilibrium point xe for all nearby equilibrium points. So for all initial conditions, such that the distance between the initial condition and the equilibrium point is less than some epsilon. And epsilon's an arbitrarily small number. So I can have an equilibrium point where the only points that converge are a very tiny fraction and elsewhere other stuff happens. And I'll show you that in a little bit. So asymptotically stable means that you converge to that equilibrium point. And an equilibrium point is what's stable. So you will sometimes say, and if the TAs are being good, they will take points off when you say, the system is stable. A system isn't stable. An equilibrium point is stable. Now, it may be that your system only has one equilibrium point, so what you meant was that the equilibrium point of this system is stable, right? But it's equilibrium points that you define stability for. Okay. We can have other types of stability. Oh, sorry. Just notationally, we'll sometimes say that an asymptotically stable equilibrium point will sometimes be called an attractor or a sink. So if you hear me use those words, this point's an attractor, this point's a sink. It's another term for asymptotically stable. All right. We can also have something where the system is unstable. So here what happens is we have an equilibrium point, and the definition of unstable is that some initial condition diverges from the equilibrium point. And so here, there's some initial condition such that if I start at that initial condition, I go away. And so this phase portrait here, if you look, the arrows are headed down in this direction to the lower left and in this direction to the upper right. So if I start, for example, right here in the middle, right, then I'll go swept up off of this. And so I diverge away from that equilibrium point, so it's unstable. Be careful, because it's not true that every initial condition diverges away. For example, if you look at this dashed line here, then if you look at the arrows, they're actually pointed directly up that dashed line. So if I start right on that dashed line, I'll converge to that equilibrium point. The equilibrium point is still unstable because there exist some nearby initial conditions that do not converge. All right? So this is an unstable equilibrium point. Sometimes no nearby initial conditions converge, but sometimes a thin set of them do, if you want to think of it that way. But we need that really something goes to infinity for some x0 in a small neighborhood, just like this. And in the book, it defines that properly and formally. Okay, so we've got asymptotically stable, we've got unstable. An unstable equilibrium point is also sometimes called a source. And so you'll hear us say a source, or if it has this feature that some converge but others diverge, we'll call it a saddle. And you can think of this sort of like a saddle that you see in the mountains, right, where the points that start any place that's not right on the ridge going up fall off. Right, but if you start right on that ridge and you kind of roll a ball down, right, then you kind of right land in the center. Right? So that's the reason for the terminology saddle. Okay, and then finally, we can have one other type of behavior, and that's something that we call a stable equilibrium point, but not asymptotically stable. So that we'll say an equilibrium point is stable, or I'll define it a little bit more formally on Wednesday, as stable in the sense of Lyapunov. If initial conditions that start near the equilibrium point stay near the equilibrium point. So for example, this system here is an example of a stable system. If I start near this equilibrium point, if you look, all of these just go in circles like you see out here. So if I start here, I stay in a circle nearby. I don't diverge, but I don't converge. And so that's stable, but not asymptotically stable, but not unstable. And the formal definition is that I can find epsilons and deltas such that if I start within a neighborhood delta, I stay within a neighborhood epsilon. And I'll define this mathematically formally on Wednesday, but the idea is if I start near, I stay near. So that's the notion of a stable equilibrium point, and we'll sometimes call a stable equilibrium point a center. All right? Okay, so we've got equilibrium points. Equilibrium points can be stable. Here is an example dynamical system that has a couple of equilibrium points. All right, so with apologies to the MP3 crowd. I'm just going to use one of these. This is a mechanical system that is a pendulum with two links on it. All right, and so it has some kind of interesting dynamics. All right, and so we can ask, is this system stable or unstable? All right, how many people think this system is stable? How many people think the system is unstable? Good. How many people think that I should say equilibrium point instead of system? Right? Yeah, all right. Good. So the system, who knows, right? I mean, it could be stable, could be unstable, right? All right. So how about equilibrium points? What are the equilibrium points? Well, there's one equilibrium point, right? Both hanging down. There are other equilibrium points. Here's another equilibrium point, right? So if you think about it, if I get it just exactly right, right, everything will balance. And it'll stay there. All right? So there's two. Any others? Okay. There's another one. All right? And then here's a third one. So this up. All right? Or fourth one, rather. Okay. So there's four. Anyone want to go for five? Any others like this? No? All right. Four equilibrium points. Now we can ask, which ones are stable and unstable? This one. Stable, asymptotically stable, or unstable? All right, asymptotically stable because there's a little bit of damping in this system, right? So if I start it moving, it's nearby, right? I stay nearby, so it's stable in the sense of Lyapunov. It is also, so something that's asymptotically stable is also stable in the sense of Lyapunov. If we wait long enough, this has got pretty good bearings, right? Eventually it will converge into that equilibrium point, maybe at time t equals infinity, all right? Okay, how about this equilibrium point? Right, so unstable. Now let's see if I can do this. Sometimes I can. If I get really lucky, there's enough stiction in these things, I can actually get it to stop there, right, and stay there. Also, if I sort of swung it just right, you can imagine something where I swing it, right, and it just swings up and just comes up exactly right and lands there, right? It's possible. Right? So there might be some stable starting conditions, but obviously there's a nearby condition, right, and it's unstable there. It doesn't stay nearby. Right. So that one's unstable, this one's unstable, right? Same thing, if I could just get it, right? If I could just balance it, this one's unstable. If I swung it exactly right, right, I could get it to swing around exactly once and come back up here, right? So all of these other ones are actually saddles, right? They have a stable direction if you start it exactly right, but you'll never see that, right? Nobody's ever seen somebody swing one of these, except maybe in a movie or something, and have it land, right? Okay, so this is an example of a dynamical system. This is also a nice one for showing that when you have unstable systems, very small differences can make a large difference in the long-term trajectories. So for example, here I've got two of these pendula. I'm going to try and start them more or less at the same position and velocity. So I'm going to swing them and both let them go, right? And then when I do that, they start out pretty close, right? But after not very long at all, they're doing very different things, right? And of course, a phase portrait would tell you this, right? The one hard part is, right, how many states for this system? Right? Two angles and you need the velocities, so it's a four-state system. So if you can visualize things in four dimensions, you can draw a four-dimensional phase portrait and see that these things go all around in funny ways. Harder in two dimensions. Okay. It's amazing when the energy transfers and it does a couple of those whoop-whoop-whoops really well. Okay, so Well, you're all mesmerized by that. For the people who are on MP3s, I just went through this particular diagram, right? So there are all of the equilibrium points, and we can verify that equilibrium point number 1 is stable, equilibrium point 3 is unstable, equilibrium 2 and 4 are stable, but with some stable modes, meaning that there's some motions, and actually equilibrium point 3 also has a stable mode, right? This one that swings up. So, in fact, all three of these are unstable, but they're actually saddles. That is, that they have some directions in which it will converge. All right, so that's the notion of equilibrium points and stability. We can also think a little bit about local behavior versus global behavior. And what do I mean by that? So, when we defined stability, we defined it by saying that there exist nearby points that converge, or you start nearby, you stay nearby. And so as we defined it, stability is a local concept. So equilibrium points define what happens around, stability defines what happens around an equilibrium point. But of course, a single dynamical system can have multiple equilibria. There's one sitting at the front of the lecture hall. And so it may have both stable and unstable. And so you can ask, well, how does all that work? And so one of the nice notions is the notion of a region of attraction of an equilibrium point. And that's the set of all initial conditions that converge to a given equilibrium point. So this is actually the phase portrait for one pendulum. And so if I were to lock this angle here, see if I can do it without hurting myself. There we go. If I were to lock this angle and just look at this particular system, it has two states, right? The angle and the velocity. And this is actually the phase portrait behind me for that, right? With the straight up position being unstable and the down position being stable. And so, in particular, in this one, what you see happening is that's the stable equilibrium point. You see that things converge. These are both unstable equilibrium points. They're actually saddles. And these are ones where I've wrapped around more than one time. And I can say, well, which set of initial conditions converge to this? And so you can just trace out a line, right? You can sort of say, well, what about, for example, this point right in here? Is that part of the region of attraction? Sure, right? Follow these things around, it comes in, right? What about this point way out here? Is that part of the region of attraction? All right, well, let's see, right? I sort of follow this line around. Oh, yeah, look at that, it comes in, right? What about this point over here? Right? Doesn't look like it, right? If you were to trace it around, it actually falls into this one over here. Right? All right, so what for this equilibrium point here then, what the region of attraction looks like is that. So that region is the set of all initial conditions that converge to this particular equilibrium point. And there's a line here, often called the separatrix, that separates out the region of attraction of this from another region of attraction. Now, what's going on in this system is, we have to be a little bit careful, in the way that we've written it, we've written x1 as a number between minus infinity and infinity. I've plotted it from minus 2 pi to 2 pi, but the plot obviously keeps going on. And so what's happening is that this equilibrium point corresponds to my initial condition, say hanging down. This equilibrium point corresponds to wrapped up like this. The next equilibrium point in that direction is going all the way around, and I'm thinking of this as a separate equilibrium point because I went around one time, right? So it's like I'm keeping track of the number of revolutions. And so what you see happening is that if I start even at x1 equals 0 at high enough velocity, right? So I push it pretty hard, it'll actually loop around once before it finally settles in. And so that's this looping around and then kind of converging into this once wrapped around equilibrium point. All right. Similarly here, I'm sort of starting, you know, two revolutions over, one revolution over, but I'm pushing it enough that it wraps around and comes in. All right. So does this picture make sense? Okay, you're going to be drawing a lot of these pictures. Right. And you're going to be trying to reason both with pictures and also with mathematics about, is this equilibrium point stable or unstable and how do I know? All right, so equilibrium points and stability define local behavior. Regions of attraction tell us something about global behavior. But there are other things that can happen as well. And in particular, as we get more sophisticated systems, we can have other types of dynamic phenomena. And so let's look at, as an example, the predator-prey system. So we looked at the predator-prey system, I think, in week two. Yeah, last week, because we did it in discrete time, right? I said this is the number of hares and foxes, rabbits and foxes, hares and lynx, whichever you prefer. And we want to look at how they evolve as an ecosystem. Now, when we did that, we wrote it as a discrete time equation. Every week you go out and measure it. We can also take a continuous time approximation. So this is a different model. And in this particular model, we say that the number of rabbits is equal to some growth rate of the rabbits times this term here. And in this model, we have some notion of what's called the carrying capacity of the environment. So if you ignore this term here for a second, you say, what are the equilibrium points of this part of the equation? What are the equilibrium values of R? If I set R dot equal to 0, that can happen in one of two ways. R can equal 0. So guess what? If you don't have any rabbits, you don't get any rabbits, right? Nothing to meet. But it can also be 0 if R is equal to K. Right? And so there's some upper bound on the number of rabbits that's in ecosystems that's called the carrying capacity of the environment. That's the total amount of grass that you have, and if the rabbits eat more than that, they will come back, right? So that value there then is another partial equilibrium. We haven't looked at the full dynamics. So this term tells us the rabbit growth. This term similarly tells us the fox growth. And this term over here is the coupling term. And as we did before, this term over here, we lose rabbits depending on the number of foxes that are around. So if we have more foxes, we lose rabbits faster. But there's also some nonlinearities in here. And notice that in this term, the carrying capacity depends on the food source, which is rabbits, right? So it's little k times r. So the number of foxes you can have depends on the number of rabbits. Right. So you can find a more detailed description of this in chapter 3 of the book, in the one that's all the examples. And you can find out where these come from. This is called the logistic equation. So if you're interested in ecosystems, you can look at this. But this system is also something that you could just think of as somebody who knows what questions they want to answer has looked at this and decided that this is a good model to answer their questions. And now we'd like to understand the behavior of that model system. All right, so two-dimensional system, very first thing you do, draw a phase portrait. And so the phase portrait for this system looks like that. All right, so it's kind of weird looking. Now, the arrows are a little too small for you to see, and I may even get them backwards. They're the little dots that are in there. But we can ask, where are the equilibrium points? And the way that you would pick it off of the diagram is you would look for spots where if you start there, you stay there. The way you'd pick it out of the equations, which we'll do in a second, is you look to see where is r dot equal to 0 and f dot equal to 0, right? Because this is f of x over here, where x is r and f the state. And so if you do that, you find out that there's an equilibrium point down here, and there's also an equilibrium point at 0. So if I have 0 rabbits and foxes, then nothing happens. So I didn't put it, but there's one at 0. And that's it. Those are the only two equilibrium points. But in fact, if you look at what happens in this system, you don't converge to the equilibrium point. It's a little bit hard to see, but if you were to look at it in more detail and in particular kind of go in, you would find that this is actually an unstable equilibrium point, and it's at 6.5 rabbits, which presumably means rabbits per acre or something like that, and 1.3 foxes. And you can show that if I start near here, I actually go away. And in fact, I go away, and I go, and I go, and I get into this big oscillation. That shouldn't be a surprise. Remember, the predator-prey system was the one where we took data, right, and we saw the population of rabbits and foxes oscillating. So perhaps it shouldn't be a surprise that it oscillates. So that equilibrium point is unstable. There's another equilibrium point at 0, 0, which is irrelevant for the problem, right? It's not a good, useful one. There's actually an equilibrium point at negative numbers of rabbits and foxes, which is clearly a byproduct of the model. But there's some other features. In particular, there are what are called invariant curves. So we'll say that a curve or a set is an invariant set if I start on the curve and I stay on the curve. An equilibrium point is sort of an invariant set. If I start at the equilibrium point, I stay there. But you can have more general things. And in particular, one of them is called a limit cycle. So if I start on this blue line that you can see here, it turns out, and you can show, and I'll kind of show how you show it in a second, that I stay on that blue line. And so this, if I start on this oscillation, and this oscillation includes some number of rabbits and some number of foxes relative to that number of rabbits, right? I start here, then I oscillate around. And if I start off of it, I get closer to it. So in fact, this is what's called an attractor as a set. So this limit cycle is a stable limit cycle, meaning that if I start near it, I converge to it, just like equilibrium points. And so we can have these notions of limit cycles, and this is a global feature, or a more global feature, right? It doesn't depend on just what's happening right there. It really depends on what's happening out in the overall population. So we can get these much more interesting types of behavior as we look at some of these systems. Okay, and you can demonstrate numerically in this particular case that equilibrium point is stable, and you do that if you want by just looking at the phase portrait, starting nearby it, and sort of watching things converge in. All right, now, unfortunately, this example is sufficiently complicated that computing out the exact coordinates of that curve and verifying the stability analytically is tricky, right? I mean, you can imagine there's not an easy equation for something of that shape, right? It's not an ellipse or a circle or something simple. So just to kind of give the idea a little bit more concretely, let's take a simpler system than that. So this is a system that also has a limit cycle. The phase portrait is over here on the right. There's an equilibrium point at the origin, and the trajectories here go out this way. So if I start a little bit off from the origin, I go out to this limit cycle. If I start outside the limit cycle, I come into this limit cycle. That's what the phase portrait looks like. And the dynamics are given right here, right, as this set of nonlinear ordinary differential equations. And if you were to simulate this system starting from initial condition, some small initial condition, you see that you grow away from that initial condition and you end up in an oscillation. Very much like the type of oscillation we saw in the predator-prey. But obviously, in this case, it's a very simple system. Now, on this one, we can say, what are the invariant sets? So one invariant set is the equilibrium point 0, 0. How do we see that? If I plug x1 equals 0, x2 equals 0 into the right-hand side of the differential equation, I get 0, right? That's our definition of an equilibrium point. But notice in this particular case, another way that I can get 0 is that if I start with the magnitude of x equal to 1, what does that mean? X is a vector, so x1 squared plus x2 squared square root equal to 1. That's the same as x1 squared plus x2 squared equal to 1, right? Square both sides. Then, of course, this is 1 minus x1 squared plus x2 squared, the quantity, or 1 minus x1 squared minus x2 squared. So if I start on the magnitude 1 circle, then dx1 changes, right? But it turns out it changes exactly tangent to the circle, right? So I start on the circle, I actually stay on the circle. So this takes a little bit of calculation, but if you calculate out the tangent to a circle, you'll find out that it's given by this minus x2, x1. Okay? So this term goes away if I'm on the circle, and you can show that this term keeps me on the circle. Right? That's a little exercise to do. Sounds like a good midterm problem, for example. All right, to show this is an invariant set. And from the simulation side, you can see, in fact, that in this limit cycle, we have something that's called periodicity. That is that x at time t plus some period, capital T, is the same as x at the original time t. And the period here is probably 2 pi. Right? So in other words, if I look at the peak here, that peak occurs at, you know, something like 8 seconds. And if I look at the peak here, it occurs at something like 2 pi, right? 14.28 seconds. Right? So we'll say that a limit cycle has a period if x at a time t plus that period is the same as x at time t. Right? So forget this for a second on the right-hand side. Does all of this make sense? Limit cycle, invariant set, dynamics, and some intuition about how I showed that this might be an invariant set. I'm going to prove it in a second. All right. So now let me give you a kind of a sketch of a proof, and this will actually motivate what we do on Wednesday in terms of Lyapunov functions for equilibrium points. But suppose somebody says, yeah, but prove that you actually converge there. How would you do that? Well, here's an easy way to do it. Suppose that I take a function v. It's a function of the states given by this expression here. 1 quarter 1 minus x1 squared minus x2 squared quantity squared. Now, what can I say about v? First off, v is always positive. Right, because it's basically a square in here. Right, so it's always it's never a negative number. It's either zero or a positive number. When is it zero? It's only zero when the magnitude of x is 1, right? When x1 squared plus x2 squared is equal to 1, v will be zero. Every place else, it's a positive number. Suppose I now take this function, and I compute the derivative of that function. And I say, how does the derivative of that function change as my system evolves? So I take v, I take the time derivative of v, I get x1, x1 dot plus x2, x2 dot times this thing. So that should be the correct derivative just by taking the derivative of this. You get a 2 down here, you take the derivative of the inside once, you get another 2, the 1/4 cancels out, and you're left with this. Everybody believe that calculation? Okay. I don't get a buck if I made a problem on the notes. By the way, $4 handed out so far. So if you're not one of the lucky ones, you should be reading that thing quicker. Easy ones, too.
Okay, so now I have x1 and x2 dot. I know how those move, right? There's the equations for x1 dot and x2 dot. I can plug those in to here, and I get a big polynomial mess. Right? It's kind of ugly and complicated looking. But if you cancel all the terms and rearrange a little bit, what you'll see is that you actually get this thing here. Right? Now, look at v dot. V dot is always negative, right? Because that's a positive term and this is a positive term. And it's only zero in two places. When v is equal to, when x1 and x2 are both equal to zero, or when x1 squared plus x2 squared equals 1. Right? So what does that mean? It means that v is positive inside the circle, positive outside the circle. It's everywhere positive. Right? If I look at v dot, how does v change as I flow along? However I flow, v has to get smaller, right? Unless I start at this equilibrium point, which I'm not going to do. So except for at that equilibrium point, v has to get smaller because v dot's negative. I have a positive number. It's getting smaller. What happens? It eventually has to converge to zero. Right? Can't go negative. So it eventually converges to zero. So if along my trajectories, v goes to zero, and if I know that v is only zero on this circle, then I must end up on the circle. All right. So it's an energy-like argument. You can think of this as some sort of an energy-like function for this funky system that says that I converge to this one equilibrium point. Not energy, well, I shouldn't say that. It's a function that happens to be positive that tells us you converge. So this idea of looking at functions that tell us converge, it comes up in lots of different places. It comes up in electrical engineering, mechanical engineering, computer science, people who know about formal verification, you look for invariance, this is the same type of an idea. Right? So you can actually use this in a number of different fields, and it's an important idea. So I'm going to spend Wednesday's lecture talking about, starting much simpler, but talking about functions like this for proving stability. So as we get into the analytical part of the course on, or part of this material on Wednesday, we'll talk about these invariant functions. These functions. And we're going to call them Lyapunov functions. So, okay, so that's the idea of looking at stability and dynamic behavior. Now, we can also look at a little bit more generally the performance of a system. And so when we talk about performance for a feedback system, we normally talk about, or for a control system rather, we normally talk about input-output performance. So for example, I give you a command to go from 20 meters per second to 30 meters per second, and I want to know how quickly do you get there. Right? That's exactly the problem you've been looking at on the homework. And so I can say, how does the system respond to changes in input values? And I can ask that question in a couple of different ways. And we normally separate that, and we're going to talk a lot about this later in the course, but I just want to introduce it now. We normally talk about the transient response versus the steady state response. So for example, if I take not this particular system, but a mass spring system, and I push it and I look at what the results are, this might be what the mass spring system that we looked like last time, right, where I was looking at pushing something with a sinusoid last week, this might be the response of that to a sinusoid. So I push one of the masses sinusoidally, and I look what happens. And what you see is that you get, at long times, you get a periodic oscillation at a given frequency and magnitude. But at the very beginning, you get some sort of an oscillation while it kind of settles into that. Right? And so you see some sort of a transient where things are kind of moving around, and then it sort of settles into a steady pattern. Right? You see this with lots of things. Horses, when they gallop right for a little bit, right when they start, there's a kind of transient, and then they settle into a regular periodic pattern. So this periodic, this point where you settle into a steady pattern, we call the steady state response. The part before that, while things are looking a little bit different, we call the transient response. And both the transient and the steady state response are important. The transient response is how you respond to changes and how you respond on the short time scales. The steady state is the long-term response to changes. And so as we go into the class, we'll start talking more and more about the long and short-term behavior. Now, one of the things that we can use to do that, and a particularly common tool in control systems, is what's called the step response. You've been doing step responses for the last couple of weeks. So when we have a step response, that means that we apply a step input and we look at the output. And so here's an example of an input, which was just a step, and an output, which is this blue line that's sort of oscillating around. And we have a couple of terms that we'll define about that. We define I'll do the overshoot first. The overshoot of a step response is the percentage that you shoot above your final value on the first oscillation, if there is one. So you shoot up. Some you have to be a little careful. Sometimes people define the overshoot as the maximum that you shoot over the top, which might not be on the first oscillation if you have a complicated system. Some people define it as the amount you shoot over the first time before you turn back down. Either of them are okay. Often it doesn't matter, meaning there's only one oscillation up. Right, here's another one, but we'll define the overshoot to be the maximum amount that we go over. And that tells us how much we sort of respond too quickly to what's going on. We can also look at the steady state value, which tells us what happens in steady state on a step response. That is, how close do I get to, or what's the final value that I actually converge to. Two other things that are important are what's called the rise time. That's usually defined as the amount of time it takes to go from 5% of the magnitude of the final value to 95% of the magnitude of the final value. And the settling time, which is the amount of time it takes to come within either 5% or 10% of that final value and stay there. Right? So I might shoot up quickly, hit it, overshoot, so I oscillate outside of this bound, and then I finally come in and I stay in. And so the performance of a system we can define by looking at the rise time, overshoot, settling time, and steady state value. And in fact, a lot of the design specifications you get will be that way. So if you're doing CD head tracking, you don't want to overshoot too much because then you can't read what's underneath the head. You want to get there quickly, so that might be the settling time. So if you settle in, you can start reading here. You don't want to overshoot. You might lose track of where you are. And you'd like the steady state value to be within some number of microns of the center of the track. Okay, so the rise time then will be the 5 to 95% time that it takes to go from 5% to 95%. The overshoot is the ratio, so we normally do it as the ratio between the peak value and the steady state value. The settling time is to stay within and some number, and it can be 2%, 5%, 10%. You have to define it. Usually you'll say the 2% rise, the 2% settling time or the 5% settling time. And then finally, the steady state value. Okay, so how do these performance types of specifications relate back to the kind of dynamics of the system and phase plane portraits? And so to sort of show that, we're going to focus on a particular class of systems. Whoops, wow, that was interesting. Now let's see if I can get it back to anything. Da-da-da. I don't know what it did. Yeah, exactly. Uh-oh, that's right. Let's see. Let me try and do this a little bit faster than that. Okay, so the idea then is going to be to hopefully get this chart to work. No? Yes, okay, stay. All right. So let's look at a special class of systems that are second order systems. And so I'm going to write them in a particular form. So I've written it as a second order ordinary differential equation, q double dot plus 2 zeta omega 0 q dot plus omega 0 squared q equals my input u. And I can convert that to a state space form by choosing x1 to be q and x2 to be q dot. And if I do that, I get this equation. And now I can look at what happens as a function of omega 0 and zeta to the step response and to the phase portrait. So here, for example, are a set of four phase portraits for decreasing values of zeta. So I think this one in the upper left is zeta equals 2, this is zeta equals 1, this is zeta equals 0.5, this is zeta equals 0.2. And here are the corresponding step responses for those systems. The bottom one here is zeta equals 2, zeta equals 1, actually that one's probably not 1, but 0.5, 0.2, and 0.1. So I think the numbers of the step response don't correspond exactly to the phase portraits, but you get the idea that if my phase portrait sort of comes in quickly and doesn't have any of this swirling behavior, right, I get something that comes in very quickly, has a somewhat slower rise time, but a fast settling time. I can speed up the rise time, but get some overshoot, and I start to get a little bit of swirling in here. If you look, you can kind of see it. I can really speed up the rise time, or speed it up a little bit more, but then I get a lot of overshoot, and I get this swirling. So the swirling around the equilibrium point of that dynamical system in a second order system is the same as the oscillations that you get around the step response. Now, why am I sort of saying it this way? Really, I'm comparing apples and oranges, right? I mean, this was the input-output step response. This is an initial condition response and how I move to an equilibrium point. They're really quite different things to some extent. One's input-output, the other one just has to do the natural dynamics. But for a second-order system, and for most systems, they're coupled. In particular, if you have a really lively system, it really sort of swirls around before it comes in, chances are you're going to get lots of oscillations in the step response too. You'll get lots of oscillations in the initial condition response, lots of oscillations in the step response. And what we'll do later in the class is we'll talk about if you can design the dynamics of the system. Remember, that's one of the principal things you do with feedback. Then how should you design zeta and omega zero to give you the desired response? Yeah, question.
Those plots there don't consider any U input, right? I mean, they're only for the homogeneous kernel.
Exactly. And that's why, in some sense, I'm comparing apples and oranges. Why does it work? Because what controls the swirling here are zeta and omega. What controls the step response? Zeta and omega, right? So, I mean, the same two things. And as we'll see, it's the location of the eigenvalues that does this, right? And we'll talk about that next week. Okay, so then there's at least some connection with stability and performance through these same types of ideas. And as we go on in the class, we'll make that a little bit more precise. All right, so we've kind of covered a little bit of ground in this particular lecture. So we've talked about equilibrium points and stability of equilibrium points as a way of capturing the local behavior of a dynamical system. We've talked about local versus global and things like the region of attraction or limit cycles as global sorts of behaviors. And we've talked about this notion of performance specification, and we've done it kind of in the context of the step response and showed how that relates a little bit to the same parameters that control the dynamic response. And we've looked at this inverted pendulum as an example of an interesting dynamical system. Okay, so what's going to happen now is on your homework, you'll get some practice on equilibrium points and stability. So you'll be given, is it four or five systems? Three? Oh man, we're getting easy on you guys. Okay, we'll give you three dynamical systems for which you need to calculate out the equilibrium points and determine stability of the equilibrium points. And they come from a variety of different fields. You'll look at the response, step and frequency response for a cruise control system, but phase portraits for the cruise control system and stability of the cruise control system. And we'll actually prove stability of the cruise control system using a Lyapunov function, which is what we're going to cover on Wednesday. So on Wednesday, we're going to go into this Lyapunov theory. If you've talked to anybody who's taken 110, say, oh, we're doing Lyapunov functions, and watch them cringe, okay? So Lyapunov functions are both difficult to kind of get your hands around and incredibly useful. They are the main workhorse of nonlinear control theory, so they're a good thing to know. Forget this, that's not what's happening Friday. Sorry, I didn't update the chart. So on Friday, we'll continue with Lyapunov functions because last year we found out they're hard, so we're going to spend two lectures on it, and then next week we'll go into linear systems. And if any of this didn't make sense, you should all have mud cards. Please turn one in, and we will get those questions back to you. Hi.
Can I get a
Sure.
Doesn't it yet?
I do. There you go.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Hey, Dirk.
How's it going?
Good.
Two questions. First of all, bring me around to chat in the next 2 weeks. I know this week you're busy. I talked to Gloria this morning.
Right. I'm out this week. I mean, I'm here, and I'll show up for class, but I'm otherwise out.
All right.
Oh, hang on. We don't want to record my particular schedule.